Richard put the last spoonful in his mouth, and after he swallowed, he licked his spoon clean and dropped it in the tin bowl with a clank. His face, calm and triumphant, came up to the wizard's squinting eyes.
"Wizard's first rule," Richard announced with a wisp of a smile. "The first step to believing something is wanting to believe it is true, or being afraid it is."
"I told you," Kaelin fumed at Zed. "I told you he would find out."
Zed paid her no attention. His eyes were locked on Richard.
"I thought about it last night," Richard explained as he set down his bowl. "I decided you were right, that you should know what Shota said. After all, you're a wizard. Maybe there's something in it you could help us with to stop Darken Rawl. I knew you wouldn't rest until you knew what had happened. I decided I would tell you today, but then I figured you would get it out of Kaelin first, one way or another."
Kaelin fell back on the blanket, laughing. Zed straightened his back and put his fists on his hips.
"Bags! Richard, do you have any idea what you have just done?"
"Magic," Richard smiled. "A trick, if done properly, is magic," he shrugged. "Or, so I've been told."
Zed nodded slowly.
"Indeed."
He pointed a thin finger skyward, the sparkle returning to his intense hazel eyes.
"You have tricked a wizard with his own rule. Not one of my wizards was ever able to do that."
He stepped closer, a grin spreading on his face.
"Bags, Richard, you have it. You have the gift, my boy. You can be a wizard of the First Order, like me."
Richard frowned. "I don't want to be a wizard." Zed ignored his words.
"You have passed the first test."
"You just said none of the other wizards were able to do it. So how could they be wizards if they couldn't pass the test?" Zed gave him a one-sided smile.
"They were wizards of the Third Order. One, Giller, is of the Second Order. None were able to pass the test to be a wizard of the First Order. They didn't have the gift, only the calling."
Richard made a smirk. "It was just a trick. Don't make something out of it that it wasn't."
"A very special trick."
Zed's eyes narrowed again.
"I'm impressed. I'm also very proud of you."
"And how many of these tests are there, if this is the first?"
Zed shrugged. "Oh, I don't know. Maybe a few hundred or so.
But you have the gift, Richard."
A shadow of worry passed across his eyes, as if he hadn't expected it.
"You must learn to control it, or..."
His eyes lit up again.
"I will teach you. You really could be a wizard of the First Order."
Richard realized he was starting to listen too closely and shook his head to clear it.
"I told you, I don't want to be a wizard," he added under his breath.
"I don't want anything to do with magic ever again when this is over." He realized that Kaelin was staring at him. He looked from one wide-eyed face to another.
"It was just a stupid little trick, nothing more."
"Just a stupid little trick if done on someone else. No small trick if done on a wizard."
Richard rolled his eyes.
"The both of you are..."
Zed leaned forward eagerly, cutting him off.
"Can you command the wind?"
Richard leaned back a little.
"Of course I can," he said, playing along.
He held both hands up to the sky.
"Come to me, brother wind, gather about, blow a gale for me."
He spread his arms dramatically. Kaelin wrapped her cloak around herself expectantly. Zed looked about. Nothing happened. The two of them seemed a little disappointed.
"What's the matter with the two of you?" Richard scowled. "Did you eat some bad berries?"
Zed turned to her.
"He must learn that later."
Kaelin considered what Zed said, then looked up at Richard.
"Richard, to be a wizard, it's not an offer made to many."
Zed scrubbed his hands together.
"Bags, I wish I had the books here with me now. I'd bet a dragon's tooth they have something to say about this."
His face darkened.
"But then there is the matter of the pain, and..."
Richard squirmed uncomfortably.
"And just... what kind of wizard are you, anyway? You don't even have a beard."
Zed came out of his own thoughts and frowned.
What? A beard? Where's your beard? I've been wondering about it ever since I found out you were a wizard. Wizards are supposed to have beards, you know.
Who told you this?
Well, I don't know. Everybody knows it. Wizards are supposed to have beards. It's common knowledge. I'm surprised you don't know it. Zed made a face as if he had just sucked on a lemon.
But I hate beards. Oh, they itch.
Richard shrugged. Seems you don't know as much as you think you do about being a wizard, if you don't even know wizards are supposed to have beards. Zed folded his arms.
A beard, is it?
He unfolded his arms and began drawing his fingers and thumb down opposite sides of his chin. As he drew his fingers repeatedly, whiskers began appearing. The more he did this, the longer the whiskers grew. Richard watched, wide-eyed, until a snow-white beard reached to the middle of Zed's chest. Zed cocked his head and gave Richard an intent look.
Will this do, my boy?
Richard realized his mouth was open. He made it shut, but could only nod. Zed scratched his chin and neck.
Good. Now give me your knife so I can shave this thing off. It itches like ants.
My knife? What do you need my knife for? Why don't you just make it disappear like you made it appear? Kaylin gave a little laugh, then made her face straight when he glanced at her.
It doesn't work that way. Everyone knows it doesn't work that way, Zed mocked.
He turned to Kaylin.
Doesn't everyone know? You tell him.
Magic can only do things that use what is there. It cannot undo things that have happened. I don't understand. Zed peered at him with sharp eyes.
Your first lesson, should you ever decide to become a wizard. The three of us all have magic. It is all additive magic. Additive magic uses what is there and adds to it, or uses it somehow. The magic Kaylin has uses the spark of love in a person, no matter how small, and adds to it until it's changed into something else. The magic of the Sword of Truth uses your anger and adds to it, takes power from it, until it becomes something else. I do the same thing. I can use whatever I need in nature to change things. I can change a bug to a flower. I can change a fear to a monster. I can make a broken bone knit. I can take heat from the air around us and add to it, multiply it into wizard's fire. I can make my beard grow, but I can't make it ungrow.
A rock big as his fist started rising into the air.
I can lift something. I can change it.
The rock crushed to dust.
Then you can do anything, Richard whispered.
No, I can lift or crush or move the rock, but I can't make it vanish. Where would it go? That's called subtractive magic, the undoing of things. My magic, Kaylin's magic, the sword's magic, is from this world. All magic from this world is additive magic. Darken Rawl can do any of it I can.
Zed's expression turned dark. Subtractive magic is from the underworld. Darken Rawl knows how to use that, too. I don't.
Is it as powerful as additive magic?
Subtractive magic is the counter to additive, as night is to day. Yet, it is all part of the same thing. The magic of Ordin is the magic of both, additive and subtractive. It can add to the world, and it can take the world to nothing. To open the boxes, you must be a master of both magics. People never worried about it ever happening, because no one was ever able to tap subtractive magic. But Darken Rawl commands it as easily as I command the additive.
And how do you suppose that came to be? Richard asked with a frown.
I have no idea. But it troubles me greatly.
Richard drew a deep breath.
Well, I still think you are getting worked up over nothing. All I did was a little trick.
Zed gave him a serious glare.
If done on a normal person, it would have been, as you say. But I'm a wizard. I know how the wizard's rules work. You would not have been able to do this to me except with magic of your own. I have taught many to be wizards. I have had to teach them to do what you have done. They could not do it without learning it first. Once in a great while, one is born with the gift. I was one such as this. Richard, you have the gift, too. Sooner or later, you will have to learn to control it.
He put out his hand.
Now, give me the knife so I can rid myself of this ridiculous beard.
Richard put the knife handle in Zed's hand. The blade is dull. I've been digging roots with it. It's too dull to shave with.
Really?
Zed pinched the edge of the blade between his thumb and forefinger, drawing them along the length of the knife. He turned the knife around and held it delicately between his thumb and two fingers. Richard grimaced at him shaving dry. With a light stroke, a swath of beard fell away.
You just used subtractive magic. You made some of the edge go away to sharpen it.
Zed arched an eyebrow.
No, I used what was already there and reformed the edge, making it sharp again.
Richard shook his head and went about gathering up their things while Zed shaved off the beard. Kaelin helped put things away.
You know, Zed, Richard said as he picked up the bowls, I think you're getting too obstinate in your ways. I think when this is over, you need someone. Someone to take care of you, help keep your perspective straight, put the light of day to your imagination. I think you need a wife.
A wife?
Sure, I think that's what you need. Maybe you should go back and take another look at Addie.
Addie?
Yes, Addie, Richard scolded. You remember Addie, the woman with one foot?
Oh, I remember Addie quite well.
He gave Richard his most innocent look.
But Addie has two good feet, not one.
Richard and Kaelin both came to their feet in a rush.
What?
Yes, Zed smiled, turning away. Seems it grew back.
He bent, pulling an apple from Richard's pack.
Quite unexpectedly.
Richard took Zed's sleeve and turned him around.
Zed, you...
The wizard smiled.
Are you thoroughly sure you wouldn't like to be a wizard?
He took a bite of the apple, pleased at seeing the astonishment on Richard's face. Zed handed him the knife, the blade as sharp as he had ever seen it. Richard shook his head and turned to his work.
I just want to go home and be a guide. Nothing more.
He thought a while, then asked, Zed, all the time I grew up with you, you were a wizard and I never knew. You didn't use the magic. How could you stand not to? Why didn't you?
Ah, well, there are dangers to using the magic. Also, pain.
Dangers? Like what? Zed regarded him for a moment.
You have used magic with the sword. You tell me.
But that's the sword. That's different. What dangers are there for a wizard in using the magic? And what pain? Zed gave a small, sly smile.
Only just finished with the first lesson, and already he is eager for the second.
Richard straightened.
Never mind.
He hoisted the pack onto his back. All I want to be is a woods guide. Apple in hand, Zed started toward the trail.
So you have told me.
He took a big bite.
Now I want you two to tell me everything that has happened since I was knocked unconscious. Don't leave out a thing, no matter how trivial.
Richard and Kaelin exchanged a crimson look.
I won't tell if you don't, he whispered.
She held him back with a hand on his arm.
I swear, not a word about what happened in the spirit house.
By the look in her eyes, he knew she meant to keep her word. For the rest of the day, as they trudged along the trails, keeping off the main roads, the two of them told Zed the stories of everything that had happened since they were attacked that day at the boundary. Zed made them go back to previous events at the oddest places in a story. Working off each other's words, Richard and Kaelin managed to weave the story of the mud people without mention of anything that happened between them in the spirit house. As they drew nearer to Tamarang, they crisscrossed roads and began to see refugees carrying their belongings on their backs or on small carts. Richard saw to it that they didn't stay long in the sight of people and placed himself between them and Kaelin whenever he could.
He didn't want anyone recognizing the Mother Confessor. He was relieved each time they were back in the woods. The forest was where he was most comfortable, even though it had proven its dangers to them. Late in the day, they had to take to the main road in order to cross the Calasidran River. It was too big and swift to risk fording, so they took the big wooden bridge. Zed and Richard kept Kalin protectively between them as they walked among the people crossing the bridge. Kalin kept the hood of her cloak up so people wouldn't see her long hair. Most of the people were headed for Tamarang, seeking shelter and safety from the marauding forces supposedly sweeping in from Westland. Kalin said that they would reach Tamarang by the middle of the next day. From now on, they would have to travel most of the time on the road. Richard knew that they would have to move far from the road at night to be clear of any people. He began watching the sun so as to leave them time to move deep enough into the forest before it became too dark.
"Does that feel good?"
Rachel pretended Sarah answered that it did, and tucked a little more grass around her doll to be doubly sure she was warm enough. She nestled the loaf of bread with the cloth tied around it next to Sarah.
"You'll be warm for now. I have to go get some wood before it's too dark, and then we'll have a fire. Then we can both be warm."
She left Sarah with the bread in the wayward pine and went outside. The sun was down, but it was still light enough to see. The clouds were a pretty pink. She looked at them once in a while as she picked up sticks, holding them against her body with the other arm. She checked her pocket to be sure the fire stick was still there. She had almost forgotten it last night and was scared now unless she checked to make sure she hadn't forgotten it again. She looked up again at the pretty clouds. Just as she did, some big, dark thing swooped low over the trees a little way up the hill. It must be some big bird, she thought. Ravens were big and dark. It must be one of those noisy ravens. She picked up some more sticks. Then she saw a bunch of blueberry bushes low against the ground in an open place, their leaves starting to turn a flaming red. She threw the sticks down. She was so hungry, she sat down on the berry bushes and started eating them as fast as she could pick. It was getting late in the year, and the berries were starting to get dry and shriveled, but they were still good. In fact, they tasted wonderful. She started putting one in her pocket for each one she ate. She moved on her hands and knees, picking berries, eating them, and putting them in her pocket. It was getting darker. Once in a while, she looked up at the pretty clouds. They were getting a darker color, purple. When her stomach felt better and her pocket was full, she picked the sticks up and went back to the wayward pine. Once back inside, she untied the cloth that was around the bread and dumped the berries from her pocket onto the cloth. She sat down and ate the berries off the cloth as she chatted with Sarah, offering to share her berries as she ate. Sarah didn't eat many. Rachel wished she had a mirror. She wished she could look in a mirror at her hair. Earlier in the day, she had seen herself in a dark pool. Her hair looked so wonderful, all even. Richard was such a nice man to cut it for her. She missed Richard. She wished he were here now to run away with her, to hug her. He gave the bestest hugs in the whole world. If Kalin weren't so mean, he could give her hugs too. Kalin would find out then how wonderful his hugs were. For some reason, Rachel missed her too. Her stories and her songs and her fingers on her forehead. Why did she have to be so mean and say she was going to hurt Giller? Giller was one of the nicest men in the world. Giller gave her Sarah. Rachel broke the sticks as best she could, so they would fit in the circle of stone she had made. After stacking them carefully, she pulled out the fire stick.
Light for me.
She set the fire stick down on the cloth with the berries and then warmed her hands and ate a few berries while she told Sarah some of her troubles, how she wished Richard were hugging her, how she wished Kalin weren't mean, how she hoped Kalin didn't hurt Giller, how she wished she had something other than berries to eat. Some bug bit her on the neck. She let out a little squeal and swatted it. There was a little bit of blood on her hand when she took it away. And a fly.
Look, Sarah. Look at how that stupid fly bit me. It made blood.
Sarah seemed sorry for her sting. Rachel ate a few more berries. Another fly bit her neck. Rachel swatted it, not squealing this time. There was another spot of blood on her hand.
"That hurt,"
she told Sarah. With a frown, she threw the squished fly in the fire. The fly that bit her on the arm made her jump. She slapped it flat. Another bit her neck. Rachel flailed at the flies in the air around her face. Two more bit her neck, making blood before she smacked them. Tears welled up in her eyes from the pain of the stings.
"Get away,"
she yelled as she waved her hands around. Some were inside her dress, biting her chest and back. More bit her neck. Rachel started screaming as she batted at the flies, trying to get them off. Tears streamed down her cheeks. A fly bit the inside of her ear, making her scream even louder. The sound of it buzzing in her ear made her cry and scream as she dug with her finger, trying to get it out. She thrashed her arms as she yelled. Rachel screamed in a high pitch as she stumbled out of the wayward pine, wiping flies off her eyes. She ran, arms lashing out, trying to get the flies away. The flies followed her as she ran and screamed. Something in front of her made her stop dead in her tracks. Her wide eyes worked their way up the giant, fur-covered body of the thing. Its belly was pink and had flies on it. Against the fading colors of the sky, it slowly unfolded huge wings, spreading them wide. Not wings covered with feathers, wings covered with skin. Rachel could see big blood veins in them, throbbing. With all her courage, she put her shaking hand in her pocket. The fire stick wasn't there. Her legs wouldn't move. She didn't even feel the flies that were biting her. She heard a sound like a cat purring, but a lot louder. Her eyes went up further. Glowing green eyes glared down at her. The purring sound was a low growl. The mouth opened with a louder growl, lips pulling back, showing its long, curved teeth. Rachel couldn't run. She couldn't move. She couldn't even scream. She shook as her wide eyes looked up into those mean eyes that glowed green. She forgot how to move her feet. A big claw reached for her. She felt something warm running down her legs. Chapter 38. Richard folded his arms and leaned back against the rock.
Enough!
Zed and Kalin both turned their heads, seeming to have forgotten he was even there. He had been listening to the two of them arguing for at least the last half hour as they sat in front of the fire and was tired of it. In fact, he was just plain tired. Dinner was long since done and they should be getting some sleep, but instead they were trying to decide what they would do tomorrow when they reached Tamarang. Now, instead of arguing, they started presenting their cases to him.
"I say we march in there and I deal with Giller. He's my student. I will get him to tell me what's going on. I'm still Wizard of the First Order. He will do as I say. He will give me the box."
Kalin pulled her confessor's dress from her pack and held it up to Richard. "This is the way we deal with Giller. He is my wizard and he will do as I say because he knows the consequences." Richard let out a deep breath as he rubbed his eyes with his fingertips.
"God, you both want to eat a chicken we haven't even plucked yet. We aren't even sure whose chicken it is."
"What do you mean?" Kalin asked. Richard leaned forward. Now he had their attention at last. "At the very least, Tamarang is giving a sympathetic ear to Dahara. At the very worst, Dark and Rawl is there. Most likely the fact is somewhere between the two. If we march in there and tell them what we want, they might not like it. Tamarang has a whole standing army to express to us how much they don't like it. Then what? Are the three of us going to fight a war with their army? How is this going to get us the box? How is it going to even get us to Giller? If we have to fight, I'd rather it be on the way out, not on the way in." Richard expected one of them to express some sort of objection while they sat as if being scolded, but neither did, so he went on. "Maybe Giller is waiting and hoping someone will come so he can help them get away with the box. Then again, maybe he will not be so willing to part company with it, but we won't know if we never make it to him now, will we?" He addressed Zed. You told me the box has magic, and a wizard, or Rahl, can feel that magic. But a wizard can also cover the feeling of that magic with a wizard's web, so the box can't be detected. That could be why Queen Melaena wanted a wizard, to hide the box from Rahl and use it as a bargaining tool. If we create a big commotion and scare Giller, no matter how he feels about us, he may be frightened and use the opportunity to escape. It could also be that Rahl is just waiting for the quarry to be flushed from cover, and then he will pounce. Zed turned to Kaelin.
I think the Seeker has some good points. Perhaps we should hear him out?
Kaelin smiled a little.
I believe you are correct, good wizard.
She turned to Richard.
What is your way?
You've dealt with this Queen Melaena before, right? What sort of person is she?
Kaelin needed no time to give it any thought. Tamarang is a minor and relatively insignificant land. Still, Queen Melaena is as pompous and arrogant as any queen comes.
A small snake, but a snake that can kill us nonetheless, Richard noted.
Kaelin nodded.
But a snake with a big head.
Small snakes have to be careful, cautious, when they don't know what they are up against. The first thing we have to do is to give her a worry, make her unsure enough not to bite us.
What do you mean? Kaelin asked.
You said you've dealt with her before. Confessors go to the lands to take confessions and to inspect the prisons to find out what they will. She wouldn't want to close Tamarang to a confessor, would she?
Not if she has half a brain, Zed chuckled.
Well, that's what we do then. You put your dress back on and do your duty. Simply a confessor doing what confessors are expected to do. She may not like it, but she will treat you well. She will want you to be happy. She will want you to see what you will and then be on your way. The last thing she will want is to raise a fuss. So you inspect her dungeon, smile or frown or whatever it is you do, and then before we're on our way, you say you want to speak to your former wizard.
You think she should go alone? Zed protested.
No. Kaelin doesn't have a wizard with her. The queen would see that as a tempting vulnerability. We don't want her mouth to water.
Zed folded his arms.
I will be her wizard.
No, you will not be her wizard. Darkin Rahl is killing people as we speak, looking for you. If you remove the wizard's web, let them know who you are, we'll have trouble down around our ears before we can get away with the box. Who knows what reward there is on your wrinkled hide? You will be her protection, but you will be anonymous protection. You will be...
Richard tapped the sword hilt, thinking. His eyes came back down.
You will be a cloud reader, a trusted advisor to the Mother Confessor in the absence of a wizard.
Richard frowned slightly at Zed's grumble. I'm sure you know how to play the part.
Then you will hide your sword, your identity, from her as well? Kaelin asked.
No. The presence of the Seeker will give her pause, something else to worry about, something to keep her fangs in her mouth until we're away. The whole point is to give her something she's familiar with, a confessor, so as not to raise an alarm. At the same time, give her something to keep her worried, a cloud reader and the Seeker, so she would rather be rid of us than find out what sort of trouble we might be able to cause. The way you two want to do it gets us in a fight where one or all of us could be hurt. My way puts us at minimum risk of a fight, and if it comes, at least it will be when we're on our way out with the box.
He gave each of them a stern look.
You do remember the box, don't you? In case you've forgotten, that is what we're after, not Giller's head in a basket. Whose side he's on is not an issue. We must only get the box, no more.
Kaelin folded her arms with a frown. Zed rubbed his chin while he looked into the fire. Richard let them mull it over for a while. He knew that the way they wanted to do it was sure to cause trouble, and that soon enough they would both realize it. Zed turned back to him.
Of course, you are right. I agree.
His thin face turned to Kaelin.
Mother Confessor?
She studied Zed's face a moment before looking up at Richard.
Agreed. But Richard, The two of you will have to play the part of courtiers to the Mother Confessor. Zed knows the protocol, but you don't. I hope not to be there long. Just tell me what I need to know to get by for a short time. Kaelin drew a deep breath.
Well, I guess the most important thing is to look like you are part of my escort. Be respectful.
She cleared her throat, diverting her eyes. Just pretend like I am the most important person you have ever been around, and treat me in that manner, and no one will question. Every confessor allows her attendants different liberties, and as long as you are deferential, no one will think anything of it if you should happen to do something not quite proper. Even if you think my behavior odd, just play along, all right?
Richard watched her a moment while she studied the ground. He rose to his feet.
It would be my honor, Mother Confessor. He gave a bow.
Zed cleared his throat.
A little deeper, my boy. You are not traveling with a mere confessor. You are an escort to the Mother Confessor herself.
All right, Richard sighed. I'll do my best. Now, get some sleep. I'll take first watch.
He started walking toward the trees.
Richard!
Zed called after him. He stopped, turning back.
There are many in the Midlands who have magic. Many different and dangerous types of magic. There is no telling what manner of sycophants Queen Melena has surrounded herself with. You pay attention to what Kaelin and I tell you, and do your best not to cross anyone. You may not know who or what her attendants are.
Richard drew his cloak around himself. In and out with minimum fuss. That's what I want, too. If all goes well, tomorrow at this time we will have the box, and our only worry will be to find a hole to hide in until winter.
Good. You have it right, my boy. Good night.
In a spot thin of brush, Richard found a moss-covered log to sit on while he kept an eye toward the camp and the surrounding woods. He checked to make sure the moss was dry. He didn't want to sit in damp moss and then have wet pants to make him colder. The moss was dry, so he rearranged his sword, sat down, and wrapped his cloak tight. Clouds hid the moon. If it wasn't for the fire lending the little illumination it did to the surrounding woods, it would be the kind of dark that made you think you were blind. Richard sat and brooded. He didn't like the idea of Kaelin having to put on the dress and put herself at risk. He liked it less that it was his own idea. He wondered and worried at what she meant about her acting odd and his playing along. He wondered and worried even more at what she had said about pretending she was the most important person he had ever been around. He liked that not at all. He always pictured Kaelin in his mind as his friend, at the least. He didn't like to picture her as the Mother Confessor. It was Confessor's magic that made it impossible for them to be more than friends. He was afraid to see her as others saw her, as the Mother Confessor. Any reminder of what she was, her magic, only brought the hurt deeper into his heart. It was the smallest of sounds that made him sit bolt upright. The eyes were on him. They were close, and though he couldn't see them, he could feel them. The knowledge that something was close, watching him, sent a chill across his skin. It made him feel naked, vulnerable. His eyes were wide, his heart pounding as he looked straight ahead to where he knew the thing was. The silence, except for his heart beating in his ears, was oppressive. Richard held his breath, trying to hear. Again came the soft sound of a foot being lowered stealthily to the forest floor. It was coming toward him. Richard's wide eyes stared frantically into the blackness, trying to see a movement. It was no more than 10 paces away when the yellow eyes inched into view, hunkered low to the ground. The eyes were glowering right at him. The thing stopped. He held his breath. With a howl, it sprang. Richard jumped to his feet, his hand going for the sword. When it bounded into the air, Richard saw that it was a wolf, the biggest wolf he had ever seen.
It was to him before his hand even reached the hilt. The wolf's front paws hit his chest square. The powerful impact drove him backward over the log he had been sitting on. As he fell backward, his breath knocked from him, he saw behind him something more frightening than the wolf. A hart hound. The huge jaws snapped at his chest just as the wolf reached the hart hound and went for its throat. Richard's head hit something hard. He heard a yelp and the sound of teeth ripping tendon. Everything went black. His eyes opened. Zed was looking down at him and had a middle finger to each side of Richard's forehead. Kalin was holding a torch. He felt dizzy, but stood anyway on wobbly legs until Kalin made him sit on the log. With a frown of concern, she stroked her fingers on his face.
Are you all right?
I think so, he managed.
My head. Oh, it hurts.
He thought he might throw up. Zed took the torch from Kalin and held it behind the log, casting light on the body of a hart hound, its throat ripped out. Zed looked down at Richard's sword, still in its sheath.
How is it the hound didn't have you?
Richard felt the back of his head. It hurt like daggers twisting.
I don't know. It all happened so fast.
Then he remembered, like a dream when waking. He stood up again.
A wolf! It was a wolf that has been following us.
Kalin stepped closer, put an arm around his waist to steady him.
A wolf?
The odd tone of suspicion in her voice made him look to her narrowed eyes.
Are you sure?
Richard nodded.
I was sitting here, and then, all of a sudden, I knew it was watching me. It came closer, and I saw its yellow eyes. Then it leapt at me. I thought it was attacking. It knocked me flat, right over the log. I never even had time to draw the sword, it was so fast. But it wasn't attacking me. It was going for the hart hound behind me, protecting me. I never even saw the hart hound until I was falling backward. It must have killed the hound. That wolf saved my life.
Kalin straightened herself and put her fists on her hips.
Brophy!
She called into the darkness.
Brophy! I know you're out there! Come here this instant!
The wolf trotted into the torchlight with its head down and its tail between its legs. Its thick fur was a charcoal color, from the tip of its nose to the tip of its tail. Fierce yellow eyes glowed from its dark head. The wolf dropped to its belly and crawled to Kalin's feet. Once there, it rolled onto its back with paws in the air and whined.
Brophy!
She admonished. Have you been following us?
Only to protect you, mistress.
Richard's jaw dropped. He wondered how hard he had been hit on the head.
He can talk. I heard him. That wolf can talk.
Zed and Kalin both looked up at his wide eyes. Zed glanced at her.
I thought you said you told him.
Kalin winced a little.
Well, I guess I didn't remember to tell him everything.
She frowned at Zed.
It's hard to remember everything he doesn't know. We have lived it our whole lives. You just forget he hasn't.
Come on, Zed grumbled. Let's get back to the camp, all of us.
The wizard led them with the torch, Kalin following, the wolf slinking along at her side, ears lowered, tail dragging the ground. When they sat around the fire, Richard addressed the wolf as it sat on its haunches next to Kalin.
Wolf, I guess. Brophy. The name's Brophy.
Richard sat back a little.
Brophy.
Sorry. My name is Richard and this is Zed. Brophy, I would like to thank you for saving my life.
Don't mention it, he growled.
Brophy, Kalin said in a disapproving voice, what are you doing here? The wolf's ears flattened.
There is danger for you. I have been protecting you.
You have been released, she scolded.
Was that you last night? Richard asked. Brophy regarded him with yellow eyes.
Yes. Wherever you camped, I cleared the area of hart hounds and a few other nasty things. Last night, close to morning, one came near to your camp. I took care of it. This hound tonight was hunting you. He could hear your heart beating.
I knew Mistress Kaelin would be unhappy if he ate you, so I kept him from doing it.
Richard swallowed hard.
Thank you,
he said in a weak voice.
Richard, Zed asked, rubbing his chin, the hounds are underworld beasts. They haven't bothered you up until now. What's changed?
Richard almost choked.
Well, Addie gave Kaelin a bone to carry to get us through the boundary and to protect us from underworld beasts. I had an old bone that my father gave me, and Addie said it would do the same thing. But I lost it a day or two ago.
Zed's face was wrinkled up in thought. Richard looked to the wolf, hoping to change the subject.
How come you can talk?
Brophy drew his long tongue around his lips.
Same reason you can talk. I can talk because...
He looked up at Kaelin.
You mean he doesn't know what I am?
She gave him a look, and he sank to the ground, resting his head on his paws. Kaelin locked her fingers around a knee, clicking her thumbnails together.
Richard, do you remember when I told you that sometimes, when we took a confession, the person turned out to be innocent? And once in a great while, one who was to be executed would ask to give a confession so as to prove his innocence?
Richard nodded. She cast an eye to the wolf.
Brophy was to be executed for killing a little boy. I don't kill children,
the wolf growled, coming to his feet.
Do you wish to tell the story?
The wolf sank back down.
No, mistress.
Brophy would have rather been touched by a confessor's power than be thought a child killer, not to mention what else was done to that little boy.
He requested a confessor. It's something done only rarely. Most men choose the executioner, but it meant that much to him. I told you we have a wizard with us when we take confessions. One reason is for protection, but there is another reason. In a case like this, where the person is unjustly accused and found to be innocent, he is still left touched by our power. He cannot be returned to who he was. So the wizard changes him to something else. The changing takes away some of the magic of the confessor and gives him enough concern for himself to start over with a new life.
Richard was incredulous. You were innocent? And yet you are to be left like this? For life?
Completely innocent, Brophy confirmed.
Brophy?
Kaelin spoke his name in a rising tone Richard was familiar with. The wolf sank back down.
Of killing that boy.
His cowering eyes looked up at Kaelin as she watched him.
That's all I meant, innocent of killing that boy.
Richard frowned.
What does that mean?
Kaelin looked over to him. It means that when he gave his confession, he confessed to other things he was not accused of. You see, Brophy had been engaged in occupations of a dubious nature. She glanced down at the wolf, at the gray edges of law.
I was an honest businessman, the wolf protested.
Kaelin cast an eye toward Brophy while she spoke to Richard.
Brophy was a traitor.
My father was a traitor,
Richard said, his anger rising.
I don't know what traders in Westland trade, but in the Midlands, some traders deal in things of magic.
Richard thought about the Book of Counted Shadows.
So what?
Kaelin lifted an eyebrow to him. Some of them happened to be alive at the time. Brophy rose up on his front paws.
How am I to tell? You can't always tell. Sometimes you think something is just an artifact, like a book that a collector will pay handsomely for. Sometimes it's something more, a stone, a statue, or a staff, or perhaps a... Well, how am I to know if they are alive?
Kaelin still had her eye on the wolf. You traded things of magic other than books and statues, she scolded. In this innocent business of his, he would also get himself into disagreements with people. Disagreements such as rights of ownership. When Brophy was a man, he was as big for a man as he is for a wolf. He sometimes used his size to persuade people to do as he wished. Is this not true, Brophy? The wolf's ears wilted.
It's true, mistress. I have a temper. A temper as big as my muscles. But it only came out when I was wronged. A lot of people think they can cheat traders. They think we are little more than thieves and will not stand up for ourselves.